Hello and welcome to the programme. Today, we hear about exciting plans for a new wildlife hospital. Three transition year students show off their latest publication, A Bee's Life, which they've written and illustrated. And we see shocking evidence of cannibalism in birds.
Now, where we are now, we're just out the back of your restaurant, which is on O'Connell Street. And you were here, you saw something really, really unusual. Tell us.
Yeah, well, I was walking along, I seen a seagull attacking a pigeon in the sky, and I quickly got my phone out. The pigeon had dropped to the floor, and the seagull started attacking it. And I saw the seagull really, really going to town on the pigeon, and eating the pigeon.
Eating it,
and taking, eating every organ I'd say the pigeon had in its tiny body, but sure, he devoured it.
Oh, I have to tell you, it's a bit of a gruesome video. Oh dear, but we bring you all sorts of stories on this programme, as you know. Well, today, it's the 2nd of December, and as I record this programme, I am standing on Sandyman Strand in Dublin, part of the Dublin Bay Biosphere. I'm looking right across Dublin Bay. It's a beautiful clear day, a little bit brisk, but beautifully clear. I can see Howth, and I can see the Irish Ferries ship coming out of Dublin Port, and to my right I can see Dunleary and the south coast of Dublin, and directly ahead of me I'm looking at the remnants of the old Merrion Baths, covered in graffiti and bizarrely in yellow, Helen and Derek with a big X at the end. I know who Derek is, but I don't know who Helen is. I didn't do it. But it's a beautiful day today, and I'm just wondering, as I stand here with the water lapping at my feet, what is it like in Cork? What's the view like on Harper's Island in Cork? Who better to ask than our man in Cork, ornithologist and author, and indeed, guide to the Antarctic and Arctic, Jim Wilson. Jim.
Derek, how are we doing? Yes, it is absolutely glorious here too. It is just a perfect winter's day. Sun is shining. I'm overlooking the wetland area of Harper's Island Wetlands, and it couldn't be better. Lots of ducks out on the water. Little egrets hunting along the way, and golden plover overhead. And you can hear the train go by. That's the Cork Cove line. So you can actually reach Harper's Island wetlands even if you don't have a car or you want to leave it at home. It is a really fantastic spot. We've put in lots of new facilities which will be opening up to the public next weekend. We've got new ponds, we call them scrapes. We've got a new hide. You may remember when you were down here the first time, we looked at the first hide that was put up when we opened Harper's Island Wetlands to the public for the first time. And now we've built another one. But just to stand here, and I'm so privileged because, of course, officially it's closed during the week at the moment, so I'm in here all on my own. I have it to myself. It is just wetland heaven.
And it sounds it too, Jim. The last time I was with you was, I think, 2017. A beautiful space for everybody.
It is, absolutely. I mean, this is not just for bird watchers. I mean, we always say in Birdwatch Ireland that the birds really are like flagship species. They're very obvious. They're easy enough to see, you know, unlike some of the more obscure insects and things like that. So people can actually relate to them fairly quickly. You grow up seeing them around the place, even if you're not a sort of card-carrying bird watcher. As a result of that, the birds act really as just a symbol for all of biodiversity, for all the wildlife. So anybody coming here can come along, even if you've no interest in birds, but you might be interested in other things. Butterflies, flowers, all aspects of wildlife are catered for here on Harper's Island Wetlands, for sure.
Now, as I speak to you, Jim, I could just see a flock of golden plover flying off in the distance. And my God, they're skimming the surface of the water. And they're up now and they're doing a bit of a loop. It's a bit like watching a murmuration of starlings. It's extraordinary.
It is. It's exactly the same principle. The flock, the way it moves, it's a bit like three-dimensional traffic, really. If you're in a four-lane highway, for example, if a car comes towards you from the right, you will instinctively steer to the left so that it doesn't hit you, and the car next to you will steer to the left. So from somebody looking at a distance, it looks like the three cars simultaneously just moved in synchronized way to the left, whereas that wasn't the case. You reacted in a split second to the car next to you moving towards you. And those flocks, that's how they end up doing all those fabulous you know, shapes in the sky. And the golden plover do them just like the starlings. And we've got a lovely flock of them here in Harper's Island wetland, not to be outdone by Dublin, of course, down here in Cork. We have our own golden plover flock, and they come over the island regularly during the day in the winter.
Aerial ballet, Jim, aerial ballet. Of course, it's easier for the birds to see what's beside them because their eyes are on the side of their head.
Yes, that's right. Of course, they can see all round. In fact, a golden plover, if you take a photograph of it from behind, you can actually see the eyes almost sticking out on either side of the head. So while they don't have good binocular vision like we have with the eyes in front, they've got an all-round view, which of course they need, because like a lot of the wetland birds that we find around our shores, they're out in the open, they're very exposed. And there was a peregrine falcon came through here this morning, I heard it on the grapevine, and they'd be looking out for an aerial attack by something like a peregrine falcon or even a sparrowhawk, and so they need to be able to see in front and behind and at the side all at the same time.
Now, tell me about any unusual visitors you've had in the last year or two. Bird-wise,
Oh, my goodness. Oh, yes, we've lots of unusual visitors here. But on the bird front, we've done very well. I mean, we've had, like, an American golden plover, close cousin and very similar in appearance to our own European golden plover. They nest in the high Arctic in North America. And in the autumn, when they're finished nesting, they actually fly down the west coast of North America, down to South America, almost down to the bottom sometimes. A huge migration. And then when they come back up, they come back up through South America. But instead of going up the west coast the same way they came down, they actually go up the centre of North America, back up to their breeding grounds. And one of them obviously got its compass totally mixed up, and it ended up crossing the Atlantic and landing here at Harper's Island Wetlands. And that was a great treat for the rarity hunters. But we also had an osprey. Listeners to the programme have heard us talking about ospreys in the past, because they breed in Britain. They also breed in Scandinavia. They breed in many parts of Europe. In fact, they breed all around the world. They're a very widespread species. And they're like a fish eagle. They actually literally catch fish by... You might have seen it on television. They come down and they grab it with their big long talons, a fish that's just on the surface, and they carry it off. And they always point it forward, by the way. They never hold the fish sideways, because, of course, aerodynamically, it's better to have the fish's head pointing into the wind. So that's what they do. They point it forward and they eat the fish. Now, this bird was probably a Scandinavian bird, or maybe even a Scottish bird, that was beginning to take its long migration down to Africa, south of the Sahara, and stopped off here and loved it so much, stayed a few weeks. It wasn't just seen in Harper's Island wetlands, it was actually seen around the harbour as well. An unusual visitor. So when we're out and about on Harper's Island wetlands, we're not just seeing the local stuff and the ones we normally see. There's always a chance of something strange and exciting. And because we've improved the habitat for the wetland birds in particular here, that obviously is good for the fish and all the other marine creatures that live in the water on Harper's Island. And they gain from that. And so God knows what's going to come in here in the years to come.
Jim, I have a suggestion for you. One is to stock that body of water with fish and prevent them from getting out. That's the first thing. And the second thing is to put up a platform for the osprey. And who knows, maybe it will nest in Aviemore in Scotland. The osprey nest site there is a major tourist attraction.
Derek, that's not as crazy an idea as it might sound to some of the listeners, because it has worked in other parts of the world, where they put up a platform basically on a pole, like a telephone pole or electricity pole. What you need then is you need the birds stopping off on their way north. So when they're coming back from Africa, quite a few of them will pass through Ireland on the way north. We get records every spring. But what you want is one to turn up in Harper's Island in April, May, that time of the year. And then if it sees a platform, it might try to set up a territory. Of course, you need more than one, as you know. But with a bit of luck, if a few of them started turning up, it is not beyond the bounds of possibility. As for stocking fish in that, Harper's Island wetland, it's not really like wildlife park or a zoo. We literally are just conserving the habitat and letting nature do its thing. But there appears to be plenty of fish there. In fact, we had a couple of exotic visitors from Forta Wildlife Park, which is within shouting distance of me here. A couple of pelicans came in. Now, we had to get them back to Forta Wildlife Park because they were scaring the living daylights out of everything in the place, because they're huge. And when they come into land, they're like a big Boeing 747 and everything just got scared away. But they're back in Forta now. But they really liked the place because there was a lot of fish here and there still is.
I think I heard an oyster catcher there, I think.
We get oyster catchers in here too, Derek. They feed out on the mud flats and on the mussel beds not too far from us. And then they come in here at high tide to roost, to rest and to preen and to wash and have a snooze. Also, they sometimes will feed in the grass. We've lots of grassland here as well on the island. And we can get a good number of them coming in. They're fantastic. And what I'm glad you mentioned oyster catchers, actually, because I was only just reading an email the other day from Barry O'Mahony. Barry's been on the programme before. He's a ringer. He's a trained, qualified ringer. So what he does is he catches birds, he puts metal bands on them, and we can study migration through that. And Barry really runs our migration studies unit here at Harper's Island Wetlands. And Barry sent me an email, a record of an oyster catcher he caught, and he caught it earlier this year, and it was ringed in Orkney.
Oh.
Orkney in 2011. So quite incredible that we now have a really solid link with somewhere like Orkney. This oyster catcher was caught up there and ringed, and it ended up here for the winter. Really fantastic.
Now, that's off the north coast of Scotland, the Orkney Islands and archipelago up there. It's quite a distance, or is it a long distance? I remember reading a story about an oyster catcher on Orkney, Jim, that had actually nested on a roundabout in the middle of a busy road, of all things. But is that some journey? Is that unusual to nest like that? And is it a big journey for an oyster catcher to make?
Well, to answer your first question about where it nests there on the middle of a roundabout, that's not that unusual. I've been to the Netherlands many times with good friends over there. You often see them nesting in the central aisle of a dual carriageway. You see them on roundabouts. You see them in all sorts of strange places. And the reason they're doing that is they feel safer, because the traffic actually makes them safe from land predators, particularly foxes, but also for the eggs it could be rats and all sorts of other things. But if you're in the middle of a dual carriageway or you're in the middle of a roundabout, boy, are you safe, because you're nesting on the ground. You're right out in the open. And of course, the problem arises then when the young hatch out. They're like ducklings. They're able to feed for themselves. They're able to walk and run and all that sort of things as soon as they're hatched. Within a day, they're up and running full speed. But the problem is they're now in the middle of a roundabout and there's not a lot of food there. So mom and dad have to get them off the roundabout, cross the road and to somewhere where they can start feeding. So that's the only problem you'd have with nesting in there, but not unusual at all. And as for the distance, through our studies, like a lot of the work Barry O'Mahony's been doing here, we've pieced together the migration movements of the oyster catchers, and a lot of them come to Ireland from Scotland, Scandinavia, Iceland. We get quite a few coming here from Iceland. We've learned that by putting the colour rings on. Remember we talked about the godwits on the programme, and we put these coloured rings on them so we don't have to catch them again. Well, we've done the same with oyster catchers, and lo and behold, quite a number of the Icelandic oyster catchers like to spend the winter mm-hmm. in Ireland.
Jim, just to tell our listeners what you've got on offer for them there over the Christmas period.
Okay, well, actually, I've just walked down from the
Why
Nature
not?
Trail, which is a new 2 kilometer track around the island, showing you lots of different types of wildlife, especially non-wetland wildlife. So we're talking about countryside birds. So that's going to be there. I'm now coming into the second hide that I mentioned that was built earlier this year. And boy, is this one deluxe. I must say, Glaunton Men's Shed, when they build hides, they really build hides. I could move in here. You should see the finish on it, the windows, the roof, everything. It is just top class. And it will be open to the public from next weekend. So we'll now have the two hides opened, plus that 2 kilometre nature trail. And as I look out through the windows here from the second hide, we call it the scrape hide, because we've created two large, they look like ponds, but in the business we call them a scrape because they're not very deep. It's just like scraping a foot or two of the surface away. And we've created two massive ponds right in front of this hide that has just been built so that when people come, they don't even have to open the windows. The glass is fantastic. They can sit here and they can look out onto Harper's Island wetland. And I'm just distracted, by the way, Derek, while I'm trying to talk to you here, because there are so many birds out there and so many things going on at the moment. It is just brilliant. And if you want to bring a flask with you or your sandwiches, I can think of no better place to come than here. I mean, this is really medicine for the mind. And I'm not just joking when I say that. I'm very serious. I think with the type of lifestyle we're growing accustomed to, which is very fast, very fast, very demanding, we need to be able to go to places where we can relax. And it has been proved over and over again that going to quiet green areas, looking at wildlife, actually helps us mentally. And I think on that level, as well as all the other levels of bird watching and biodiversity, this is a great place to come to. And it is due to the hard work of a lot of people. Birdwatch Ireland, both locally, the Cork branch, and nationally, for supporting it and going with it from the very, very start and pushing it along. The people of Glanthorn, again, without them, it wouldn't have happened, particularly the Glanthorn Community Association, Tidy Towns, and the Men's Shed. The Men's Shed have been just incredible. They've taken on this project and ran with it like you wouldn't believe. And then Cork County Council, people like Sharon Casey and Parig Lynch, you know, at the coalface, looking after us, making sure we do everything right. And then the council itself for supplying the funding to make it all happen. So a great example, and I would hope other local authorities might come and visit and take a leaf out of our book, that so someday in every county in Ireland we'll have a Harper's Island wetland or something similar.
Tell me, is it open over the Christmas? Can I go there on Christmas Day or Stephen's Day?
Okay, Derek. Opening hours at the moment are our weekends, that's Saturday and Sunday, 10 to 4 at weekends. Over the Christmas, as we've done in previous years, if we can get our volunteer rota together, we will do our best to have it open Christmas, Stephen's Day, New Year's Day, things like that. But the best thing for people to do is join us on Facebook or on Twitter, Harper's Island Wetlands. You'll find us using that. And if you're on that, you will get notifications or you can look it up and see what the opening times are. Because, for example, if one of our group feels like, you know, Christmas, I want to get out and stretch my legs, I'll go down and I'll open up Harper's and I'll close it later. Well, then we can open it. That's the way it works. We don't have staff, you know, we're a volunteer-led group. And so as a result, we will open it when we can. But for sure, at the weekend, Saturday, Sunday, 10 to 4, it will definitely be open. And then we hope over time to increase that, and hopefully eventually it'll be open 7 days a week. That is our ultimate aim.
Well, it's a fantastic success story as far as I'm concerned. A great project, a great dream, and good things come from dreams, and people have to think about them and then they have to make a lot of effort and make it happen. And you've done that in Cork with all of the people involved. So congratulations to everybody there. We'll make sure we put some pictures up so you can see the variety of bird species. All the pictures taken by Jim, and thank you very much indeed, Jim, for allowing us to use those pictures on our website. It's rte.ie/Mooney.